This is episode number 650 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in our news segment, we're going to talk about the new Avengers trailer, we're going to talk about Matt's interview on the C. Brian Wright podcast, Sue Storm possibly being Thor, and the passing of Leonard Nimoy. Our reviews this week will be Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy number 1 and Ms. Marvel number 12. Our BoobTube and Big Screen Bonanza will feature The Walking Dead, Teen Titans Go, Last Man on Earth, and more. And finally, this week's creator spotlight is Gail Simone, writer of Batgirl, Tomb Raider, Red Sonja, and more, who Matt spoke with at Boston Comic Con 2014.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know.
It's fun, though, isn't it?
A family full of midgets is not considered kids! That's a game!
Bond. James Bond.
I am your father.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letenry here as always with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
650 episodes. I'm doing good.
650 episodes. We are here. And we got a good one today.
Yeah. I'm really excited about the Gail Simone interview. I can't wait to hear it because, I mean, although I did it, you don't really listen to yourself when you're doing the interviews.
And dare I say, this was an interview where you could tell that you were a very big fan of the person that you were speaking to.
Yeah.
And you and I do a lot of interviews, obviously, for this show, but there are times, and I would say, like, when I spoke to Mark Waid,
yep,
where you can just tell, like, that we're giddy talking to the person that we're talking to. And she's fantastic, and we'll yeah, talk more about that as we get to that part. But we always start with our news, Matthew. And probably the biggest news as we sit here and record today is the new Avengers trailer that dropped yesterday that you have not even watched yet.
Haven't seen it yet.
What I will say about this one is that it is the most coherent and understandable trailer that you've seen so far, whereas before you just kind of got like heroes posing and stuff like, yep, that and little snippets of
lift
Ultron.
Lift up the hammer.
There's some great dialogue in this trailer. You get much more of a feel for what's happening here, which is, again, that Tony Stark has created the Ultron program and then it gains its own sentience and sort of goes on from there. But the coolest part about the new trailer is that at the end of it, you see the Vision.
Oh.
Just a quick, brief glimpse of the Vision, but pretty awesome.
My wife's favorite character of all time in any comic form is Vision.
Yeah.
And she loves that classic old red, you know, the green and red and yellow.
Yep.
So hopefully that's the Vision we're going to see.
My first introduction, it is, because you see the face.
Yep.
Which is that almost cross between pink and red.
Yep.
You know, face. And it looks awesome. My introduction to the Vision, I believe, was in the arcade and Nintendo Entertainment System game Captain America and the Avengers.
Yep.
Which featured a Vision that was all in white.
Yes.
And that I just remember the classic line when Captain America said, "You will be the one escaping."
Oh, that had the worst dialogue.
But that was my thing about that. I was like, who is this Vision dude? And then, of course, I went on to see him in other things.
Yeah, when we got married, we had our honeymoon at Weir's Beach. So we spent a ton of time
at
the arcade there. And we played a lot of Captain America and the Avengers. And my wife always played Vision, not realizing... You know, she's like,
I wonder how many other
really
people
cool.
That was their gateway into Vision, yeah, was that game.
Yeah.
Because you knew everybody else. And then you were like,
you will not be the one escaping.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is out now. You should go check that out. By the time that you hear this episode, I'm sure everyone in the world has seen that trailer now. What I will say about it is that it is the first trailer that got me really excited to see the movie.
Oh, good.
The other ones, again, they were snippets, but they didn't it didn't click with me where I was like, okay, now I'm super excited about, mm-hmm, it. This one clicked, and I was like, all right, I'm in now.
Good.
I'm all in with the Avengers movie. I want to plug the interview that you did for my podcast, the C. Brian Wright podcast, because that is up now. There's a story on the Secret Identity website, or you can go to cbrianwright.com to hear Matthew talk all about his books.
Yes.
And his newly funded, although at the time... When we were recording, the Kickstarter project for Monkey See, See Monkey was still in its final day.
We had hours left.
You had hours left,
yep,
but since that time, the project was fully funded.
Yes.
So congratulations.
Thank you very much. I wasn't even sure if we even spoke about it at all. But yeah,
we talked about it off the air,
yeah,
because it was in the last few hours there. But obviously, that's huge.
Yeah, that takes a lot of pressure off, because as you're looking ahead to print runs of that book, the Doctor
sure.
Who book, it's all covered and taken care of.
Right.
I'm able to pay the artists that helped me out with things. I'm able to people that didn't want anything. I'm able to do things,
which is awesome.
That is like my favorite part of this is Keith Gleason and Amy Kukta did some great art, and because of that, I'm able to do something for them and help them out in something
awesome
financially, which I wasn't able to do until now.
Right. So that is great. And if you didn't hear that interview yet, you can go and listen to that, because it's really the only time that Matt and I sat down to talk about our writing.
Yeah.
And, you know, talk about your projects and all the stuff that you've done in the books and how it was rooted in NaNoWriMo, because for the podcast, I'm interviewing people that have all participated in NaNoWriMo. And so that is the second episode of this season, and it's up right now. You should go check that out. Another thing that went up on the Secret Identity website this week was an article that I wrote about the potential for Sue Storm to be the new Thor. Now, there's a lot of theories out there about who the new Thor is in Marvel Comics, who's going to be behind the mask. A lot of people think it's Agent Ross from S.H.I.E.L.D., who was a character that was appearing in Thor before Odinson, mm-hmm. you know, lost the ability to wield the hammer and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of good evidence of why it's probably going to be her. But the theories have ranged from Lady Sif to the Enchantress to a bunch of other people. And I got to thinking, like, wouldn't it be cool if it was Sue Storm? Because we know with the Fantastic Four right now that they're sort of getting put on the shelf as a team.
Yep.
Because of all of the nonsense with the movies and all that kind of stuff. However, it's also been said that the characters of the Fantastic Four are going to continue to appear in the Marvel Universe and still be a big part of the Marvel Universe. And I just thought, like, when you think about who's worthy to wield the hammer, who's more worthy than basically the First Lady of Marvel? Sue Storm is essentially the First Lady of Marvel. And so wouldn't it be awesome if she turned out to be Thor? And I know that that's probably not going to be the case, but I would really, really like to see that, because I think it would be a great way for them to continue to honor this character while they're playing their nonsense games with the Fantastic Four, which I think is just ridiculous. But also to remind everybody what an important character Sue is to the Marvel Universe. And so I would really like to see that. So I'm hoping against hope that that is going to turn out to be who Thor is, especially as the Fantastic Four book is winding down.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad to think that there's going to be a time where there'll be no Fantastic Four.
Especially because the run right now with Robinson and Kirk is doing such a wonderful job of reminding you that that book is about family.
Yeah.
And what an important book that is in the Marvel Universe. And so it's really sad that one of the best Fantastic Four stories is being told right now.
Yeah.
To close out the Fantastic Four, which is a real bummer. But I would love to see her turn out to be Thor. And finally, a couple of sad notes. There were some passings in the world that we live in this week, and one of them was an absolute icon.
Yeah, Leonard Nimoy passing away. I think the biggest shock was the fact that he was 83.
I did not know that either.
I didn't realize that he was that old. He had an amazing career before Star Trek and had a pretty good career after Star Trek.
Yep.
In Search of, I did a little thing on the website about, I mean, In Search of was on, I think, three times as long as Star Trek was. I mean, that was a show that I think I liked him more than that. I mean, I was never a big Star Trek fan until the movies came out, but I think of Leonard Nimoy more than that. I think of an Invasion of the Body Snatchers. He was everywhere, and he was born in Boston, Massachusetts, which was another thing I didn't know. So he's you know, we can lay claim to him as one of our own.
Also a prominent artist.
Artist, photographer, musician. When he and William Shatner were Shatner was doing his crazy, which are some of the funniest things to listen to. Leonard Nimoy was doing ones that were a little more serious. And I also put up on the website, when I met Leonard Nimoy, it was through John Wetton. John wanted to meet him to get a picture for his girlfriend autographed. And the two of them sat there and talked about music and King Crimson, which was one of John's bands, for probably 15, 20 minutes. And I just kind of sat there like, huh, yeah, it's a great conversation to listen to, but I can't, what am I going to do? I felt like the third wheel in that one. But to hear the two of them talking about music was great. And He spent a lot of time up in Northampton, which is, you know, 20 minutes up the highway from us, because there's a artist gallery that he was associated with in some way, shape, or form. But people that went up to see him up in those things always raved about what a great guy he was, very down to earth. So that was, it's a sad loss.
Yeah, definitely.
And yesterday, as we're recording this, Daniel Von Baden, who played a lot, most of us know him as Kruger from Seinfeld, but he was also on Malcolm in the Middle. He was the commandant when Malcolm's older brother got sent to military school.
Yep.
He was the commandant who ran this school. Died yesterday, and it was sad because he had diabetes. It was complications to diabetes, and he was scheduled to have some toes amputated. I mean, that's as bad as how bad it got. But a few years ago, I believe in 2012, he tried to kill himself. So there was a lot of issues there. But
how old he was?
I want to say he was in his 70s.
Okay.
But just some sad losses. And Leonard Nimoy, it still seems strange because, I mean, that was something that even non-geek people were coming up to me at work going, yeah, I know you just started and you like this sci-fi comic book stuff, but the Mr. Spock died.
Thing about that, too, is he's just one of those guys that you just expected to be around forever.
Yeah.
You know, you just expected him to be around forever.
Not to mention, he was the one that they brought in to bridge old classic Star Trek with new Star Trek.
Sure.
And Zachary Quinto said some amazing things, who plays the Spock now in the new movies.
Yep.
Was saying how, you know, just what a great guy he was, and his favorite part of him being in the Star Trek movies was getting to know him as a friend.
Sure.
And there's a great commercial with the two of them chasing each other, or racing each other to a golf course, which I forgot what car company it is, but if you go on YouTube, type that in, it's fantastic.
All right, well, there you go. That is your news for this week. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about some comic books.
Now, just because you buy your books online doesn't mean you have to sacrifice the comic store experience. Now, many of us don't live close enough to a shop to call our own, and that's where DCBS can help you. Not only do they offer incredible discounts, but Discount Comic Book Service has the giveaways like Free Comic Book Day and Power Rings. And in the slightest chance that you have a problem with your order, DCBS is fast to make sure you're satisfied and very happy. So join the many Secret Identity listeners who have made the switch by going to www.dcbservice.com and tell them you heard it here at Secret Identity.
And we are back to talk comics, and I think we got a couple of Marvel books today. You're going to start us off with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, this is the one that is based on the animated series that is coming soon to Disney XD, because, of course, when I saw the comic, I'm like, I'm missing the cartoon, but I didn't. It's not out yet.
And am I guessing correctly that our good friend Mr. Joe Caramagna is involved with this book?
Well, he adapted the second story. You've got two stories in here. So Very Young is the first one. Adam Archer is the artist on this one. I believe Joe does the lettering in this one, because it says VC's JC. So I'm assuming that's Joe Caramagna. I don't believe Jesus works for, what is it, Visual
Chris
Calligraphy?
Chris Eliopoulos, right?
Or Chris,
Visual Calligraphy, yes. Yeah.
The story is written by Marguerite Scott, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But the story starts us off in space, and you've got the team flying around, and they're all doing their things, and it's a great little introduction to everybody and the team and what they all do and what their roles are. Like, you see Rocket and Groot are working on weapons and they're creating weapons. And Groot is, you know, adding so much, you know, I am Groot. Hey, I know you'd love that weapon. That's a great one. And then all of a sudden something happens and the ship crashes on a planet. And as the ship crashes, you've got everybody looking around. They decide they're going to go out. And as they go, they walk into a town. They walk right into some trouble going on. Now, this is a fairly short story because there are two of them in here. And as this battle breaks out, you've got everybody getting involved. They're jumping in, guns a-blazing, because they see two young kids being attacked by a group of people. So they take the two kids on the ship. And as you start to realize, the two kids are kind of jerks. And the two kids were causing the problems. And the two kids not necessarily were being chased and hassled because they were innocent kids. They were bad dudes. They get – what's his face? I'm drawing a blank on the big muscle guy.
Drax,
I'm sorry. So because I remember Drax as Drax the Destroyer, not Drax the lovable guy in the new movies. So Drax is all tied up, and Groot gets trimmed, and they're trying to get Rocket and shave him. and all this stuff is going on. So they finally realize that these two kids are causing nothing but problems. So they boot them out of the ship, and then they leave them to the adults. And that is how that story ends. And the second story is a story about where Peter Quill's mom was passing away, and Peter runs out in the field and the ship comes down. And it looks like this is how the cartoon, because it's taken right out of, I believe, the cartoon.
Yep.
And you see how when he gets kidnapped and gets taken in, and you see his interaction with seeing aliens for the first time, because when he gets kidnapped or when he gets sucked up by the ship, he doesn't have any frame of reference to what aliens are out there, anything going on. So the first monster that he sees that has like 15 eyes completely freaks him out. And then he's trying to realize how he's going to beat him. And then he gets the shock and a half when he realizes that he's not on Earth anymore, because he's seeing it over there. Now, who is the blue guy with the
Yondu?
Yes, Yondu. So you're meeting him for the first time, and that thing that Yondu, and you're seeing also the translator. He's got a universal translator that isn't quite working right away. So you see, you don't understand what he's saying. So you're seeing how Peter Quill is terrified. But he's talking about the whole thing about, you know, we're a family here. And, you know, when he keeps saying, when I first met you, I wanted to eat you. This crew wanted to eat you. I saved you. That's the very first time he says that is to him in this. So you're seeing how he saves the crew. You know, the crew's not going to eat him. And then the last page of that is Peter Quill inside that cave at the very beginning of the movie.
Oh, okay.
So you get a ton of things in here.
So they're bringing people right in if they've seen the movie.
Yes. So for me, jumping into the Guardians of the Galaxy animated series is fantastic. A great way to do it. You get a lot of cool puzzle pages.
It's also nice because we always talk about how you go to see these Marvel movies and then you walk out of the theater, and if you're not an avid comic reader,
yeah,
you're saying, oh, well, where can I go and find the comic book that looks just like the movie that I just saw? And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't exist.
Yeah. And this is what
right.
I want. And you know, having our good friend Joe involved in this is great. And I don't read Spider-Man, but I read the animated one based
sure.
on it. I don't read the Avengers, but I read the animated one. I do read Hulk, but the Hulk ones, I mean, these are all great books, and $2.99. So there is a huge selling point in here with the price. And there is no code.
You know, on a related note, I just started picking up the Flash comic book that is attached to the TV
yes.
show, which is pretty awesome because it exists in the world of the TV show, but it's not the same stories as the TV
yeah.
show, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. I thought it was just going to be kind of an adaptation of what we're seeing in the episodes, but my son is loving The Flash. We watch it together, and I'm always looking for books to get that he would be interested in, and I can't recommend that Flash one highly enough. So
yeah,
I think it's 5 issues now into
yep.
that series, and it's very good. So, all right, well, I am going to stick with Marvel, and I am going to go over to Ms. Marvel. And this is sort of a Valentine's Day one-shot sort of issue, because we just finished up a major story arc with the Inventor. And you remember, we talked about a few issues of it, where the Inventor was basically using kids off the streets
yeah.
as batteries to power his experiments. And so, of course, this book is written by G. Willow Wilson. Elmo Bondoc does the art here. Ian Herring does the colors. Joe Caramagna letters. And Chris Anka does the cover art. Now, the editor is Sana Amanat for this book, and Nick Lowe is the senior editor. And so Ms. Marvel, again, this is kind of a one-shot, but it starts off with Loki. And you see Loki in the Kingdom of Asgardia, and he is answering to Odin and to his mom. And they're basically saying, how did you get yourself into this situation this time? You know, and he's talking about how Thor was fighting the frost giants, but he came up with this plan to use horses, and he's got horse manure all over him. And so he's kind of explaining how this plan went awry, and they're like, yeah, we have a new job for you, because he's been working as an agent of Asgard. And I haven't been keeping up with that whole series, but I did read like the first issue. And so Loki's trying to kind of be a good guy now.
Mm-hmm.
And so his mom is saying to him, look, you're being reassigned. And he's saying, well, where are you sending me? And she says, well, New Jersey. And she says, Jersey City was recently attacked by a man calling himself the Inventor. And one of the things that he was working on before he got caught was a device that was capable of creating singularities that could actually breach the gap between Midgard and Asgardia. And then we would be in really Midgard and Asgard, and we'd be in big trouble. So you need to go look into that. So before he can really protest, he is now sitting in Jersey City, New Jersey. And he ends up coming through a portal and landing right in the middle of the road. And this guy's walking his dog, and he's like, are you all right, man? You need an ambulance or something? And he's like, no, I'm fine. And he's like, are you one of those hipsters from Brooklyn or what? Because he's wearing, you know, the horns on the front of his head, and he's got his long green trench coat on and his scale mail and stuff like that. And Loki's like, Brooklyn, that's funny. I like you. And he's like, could you point me towards the high school? Because that's where some of the activity was happening. And he believes that there may still be kids that are in the high school that were helping the inventor. And so this guy sort of explains to him, like, look, where you probably want to go if you want to learn more about the high school kids is go down to the Circle Q. That's where they're all, you know, usually hanging out. So he goes down to the little convenience store where Bruno, friend and guy who has a crush on Miss Marvel, works. So that's how Loki runs into this crew. And he's sitting there talking to these guys, and Kamala comes in, and she's in the middle of a rant about how she's going to fail gym class and going on and on and on. And she kind of comes in like a hurricane and ends up, you know, walking out. And at one point, Bruno kind of stammers through asking her to the Valentine's Day dance. And she thinks that he's joking and bursts out laughing. And she's like, oh, you make me feel so much better all the time. And thanks a lot for the laugh, and kind of leaves. And Loki notices, huh, this guy really likes that girl. So he says, look, if you help me out, kid, I'm going to help you write a love letter to her that will knock her socks off. It's going to be great. And so he begrudgingly agrees, and Loki pens this letter for him that then he drops off at Kamala's house. And later on that night, you see Kamala reading it, and she's saying, do I have a stalker, or like, where is this stuff coming from? And she's like, it doesn't say who sent the letter. I need to figure out who sent this letter. So I'm going to go to the Valentine's Day dance. So she goes to the Valentine's Day dance, and Bruno is there, and he's sort of waiting for his moment to kind of, you know, express his love for Kamala and all that kind of stuff. And Loki's there because he's trying to track down, are there any bad guys in this place? So he decides to go over to the punch bowl and dump in it an elixir that will make people tell the truth. It's like a truth serum. So you've got all these teenagers who are at this Valentine's Day dance, and they're all drinking the punch. And right off the bat, you've got a boyfriend and girlfriend fighting, and the boyfriend saying, could you stop treating me like a dumb jock just because I'm on the football team? I got a higher PSAT score than you did. And they're going back and forth. And so the whole place just devolves into this giant argument. And Kamala comes bursting in as Miss Marvel and says, what did you do to all these kids here? What's going on? And Loki says, well, I'm kind of on a mission, and I was just doing something that make him tell the truth. But of course, Kamala doesn't believe them, and they start to get in a bit of a fight. And as she tries to attack him, he like duplicates himself into six people, and she misses him, and they're fighting back and forth. But she does crack him in the face at least one time, and they're battling. And as they're fighting back and forth, he ends up getting the punch dumped on him. And so Loki basically confesses everything because he's, you know, talking through the punch that he just ingested. So they end up sorting everything out, and he ends up putting a protective spell on the school to protect them from any sort of bad dealings or anything that might happen at the school. And so it ends up being a bit of a team up at the end, and then Loki ends up leaving. But Bruno kind of realizes that at this point in time, Kamala is not going to be anything other than his friend, and he kind of makes peace with that. And so it's this kind of cute one-shot issue for those who maybe haven't read Miss Marvel and they want to jump on and you know, read a fun story, or those who are gearing up for the next story arc. Again, this is one of my favorite books out there right now. Kamala is a great character, and Bruno is a great character too. And he's, you know, in that situation where he's got a friend who is kind of his best friend, who's a superhero now. And as she's adjusting to being a superhero, he's adjusting to, how do I compete with the fact that she's a superhero, and why would she ever pay attention to me or like me, because I'm the guy that works at the convenience store down the street. And there's just some great dynamics in that book, and it is a lot of fun. So if you haven't checked out Miss Marvel, this is a good sort of jump on point, and the next issue will begin a new story arc. So it's definitely worth jumping on. But those are your books for this week. We are going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about movies and TV.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity. And we are back with your BoobTube and Big Screen Bonanza, and we are going to start off today with The Walking Dead, because we both watched this week.
Yes, this was the first time in a long time. Now, a few weeks ago, you and I were kind of on the same boat of, I'm just not digging this. This is not going anywhere. It's depressing. It is the, you know, I wrote in a story on the website where, you know, it's replaced villain of the month with victim of the month or victim of the week.
Right.
Where somebody's going to die. And you're like, oh, great. You know, well, at least you're resting.
It kind of felt like they were running out of ideas and we were going down that road again of how miserable can we make everybody every week and just completely wring any sense of hope out of them. Now, clearly that was all building towards them arriving at
Victoria?
No, it's not Victoria. It's Alexandria.
Alexandria. Virginia.
So they arrive at Alexandria, and they arrive to this sort of gated community where it appears it is filled with normal people.
Yeah.
Who are trying to carve out a normal life for themselves. And what I liked about this episode is that you have Rick and the crew who have been out in the wild for so long now and dealt with so much heinous, terrible things that they are like caged animals.
Yeah.
Like when they come into this community, the only thing all of them can think about is, when are these people going to turn out to be crazy?
Yeah.
What are they hiding from us? And when they do, are we going to be ready to defend ourselves? Like, we can't let our guard down for a second. And they come into this place and people are bringing them groceries,
cutting their hair,
and they get to take hot showers. And because it's a community, there's all these empty houses. So the first thing that they do is they get taken into this part of the neighborhood where they get to pick a house.
Yeah.
Oh, this is your house now.
Yep.
You're going to stay here. And the person who is running the place used to be a senator.
Yes.
Is that what it was? She used to be a senator, and she is governing this place, and yep, she's giving it, but not certainly not the governor. Yeah. And but she's given everybody a job and giving everyone tasks to do on a daily basis, and they all live together and they're making it work. And from what you see in the first episode, it certainly seems like things are going okay here.
Yeah, it almost is to me. The whole thing is you knew they were going to have trouble adjusting because they've been on the run for so long. And like you said, every horrible thing that possibly could happen has happened. And now they're relaxed. And it's almost like, I mean, I know what it's like to be on that whirlwind of something. And then you come home and you try to relax and you can't do it. It's hard because your brain is not going, but I don't have zombies chasing me.
Right.
And for them to be completely on edge because they can't relax, I do enjoy that. This may be the perfect place. I'm wondering, is it them that's going to screw it all up? And
well,
I
it's
have
funny
a feeling that,
that
that's what's going to happen.
I totally agree. I think where I feel like, and it sounds like you do too, where this series is going now, where this season is going, is that they are the bad guys now.
Yep.
They're the bad guys.
Yeah.
It's their inability to function around normal human beings now that is very likely going to cause them to do something that they can't take back and that is going to ruin this whole thing. Because yeah, it's not going to be the same thing it always is, which is we find a place, zombies break in, and they ruin the place. That's yeah. I don't see that happening here.
And they can't have another, oh, these guys are cannibals. Oh, right. These guys are this.
No, the twist this time is they're the bad guys.
They're the bad guys. You're going to have the mayor, the governor lady, say to them, we brought you in. You screwed this up. You're out of here. Because she did mention we've had to kick people out of here.
Yes.
So
now I was just talking to somebody at work about this the other day, but I think that you also are running into the problem now of the cast is too big,
mm-hmm,
and they don't have storylines for everybody. And when you think about characters just disappear through parts of the season here, like, what is happening with Daryl right now? Nothing.
Yeah.
Other than he's like a wild animal.
Oh, ripping,
you know,
that,
he's
ripping
gutting
a possum
possums on the front porch. You have Abraham
and you have Eugene,
yep,
and you have the young woman who is with them, there's nothing going, there's no storyline for them. You even have the new kid who came in, who when we lost Beth,
yep,
who, other than him going back to where he used to live and finding out that his family obviously didn't make it, what are they doing with him?
Yeah.
And so you have all of these people who don't have a storyline right now. And you also have the problem of baby Judith.
Yep.
So here's what I think might happen. I think the end result of this season may be that some of the people in the group stay here. And they, like Michonne would be a good example.
Because
she wants to be here.
Yep.
I could see them having some of the cast end up staying here to form a life, and Rick leaving baby Judith behind.
Yeah.
Because he realizes that he's too far gone now,
yep,
and he can never be, he can never just be a normal dude,
yeah,
and a normal dad. And
now a cop.
Exactly. And if there's people here who can help raise Judith and give her some semblance of a normal life, maybe that's better for her. And so I could potentially see that happening, because the other problem that they have with The Walking Dead, and I read a great article about this and I can't remember where I read it, is Daryl is a problem. And the problem with Daryl is that he is a character that was created for the television show, and he is taking storylines away from characters from the comic book, because they have to give those character traits to Daryl,
yeah,
and they have to give those storylines to Daryl. So when you look at guys like Tyrese and you look at guys like Abraham, they can't be the character that they were in the comic book, because some of that stuff gets put to Daryl.
Yeah.
And so having Daryl continuously take pieces of other people's storylines and take pieces of other people's characters is affecting how interesting those other characters are. So something has to give at some point.
Yeah, and you'll probably see Daryl leave, because I thought that entire time Daryl's going to be the one to go, you know what, I'm out of here. So now they can almost have a whole, you know, story arc with Daryl on the run again, because, you know, you sometimes forget that Daryl was a criminal before this all happened. And there was a moment when Rick came walking out in his cop uniform to go walk the beat for the first time. And you saw, I remember looking, and he said something to Daryl, like, are you all right with this? Or is this all right for you? And it was really weird.
Yeah.
It was a weird thing. But this week's episode was the first time I was excited to watch the show in probably 2 years.
So something that I watched, which is complete change of pace from that, is, and you didn't get to catch this week, is the episode of Teen Titans Go where Young Justice visited. And it was awesome. You know how they do the 15-minute episode,
yeah,
type of thing? So it was one of those, and there's really no resolution to it. But what happens is Young Justice shows up in the middle of a fight with bad guys, and you have Aqualad that's giving Robin the cold shoulder. And Robin's like, hey, Aqualad, what's going on? What are you guys up to? And Aqualad basically breaks it down for him and says, look, you and your friends are not serious enough. You're always goofing off. And he's like, no, we're really serious. And he's like, what, about what pie you're going to eat tonight and stuff like that? So he's totally ragging on Robin and basically saying, you guys are just a bunch of goofballs. Everything is, you know, being goofy. Robin is trying to have a conversation with them, and they're making fart noises over on the rest of the Teen Titans, yeah, are over on the side while he's trying to tell Aqualad how serious they are and stuff like that. And so they get insulted to the point where Robin is now feeling like the Teen Titans need to get more serious. And so he's brooding and he's thinking about his parents, and everybody's like, what is wrong with you right now? And he's like, it's time for you to get serious. And he's like, Cyborg, you're half man and half machine. And Cyborg's like, I know, that's awesome, right? And he's like, no, it's not awesome. You're torn apart because you don't know whether you're human or whether you're robot. And he starts getting in everybody's heads, like Raven's head and Starfire's
basically
head.
Basically what they were in the comics.
Exactly. And so there's this moment where they start singing a song about getting really, really serious, and they like put on these scowls and their features totally change, oh, so that they look like the worst 90s comic book characters, but that everything they say is super serious and they're going to be really serious. And of course, the whole team starts to fall apart, because that's what those comics were about, is,
yep,
all these dynamics between team members and stuff like that. And the whole thing is just poking a giant amount of fun at how comics often take themselves way too seriously.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's also sort of saying to the people who complain about Teen Titans Go being silly, like, lighten up, dude.
Yeah.
Like, not everything has to be this way. So for me, one of my favorite episodes of all time, because it really is just saying to everybody, it's okay to have fun sometimes. Not everything has to be super serious, but the episode is a riot.
Yeah, I'm psyched because I got it in the DVR. I'm behind. Interesting that I just realized maybe a week ago, this is the new season of Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
It's 10 episodes in.
I didn't realize that either.
So I had to binge watch 7 or 8 episodes in one sitting. This season, Frank is insane. I mean, Frank was always a little on the edge.
Sure.
But he is so nuts. It is freaky. Dennis is now turning he's going a little more on the psychotic side too. And you have Charlie, who's the most normal of all of them.
Which is scary.
Yeah. I mean, it is a complete reversal. But the last one I watched was Mac's dad is in jail for murder. And he's like, Daddy, I'm going to get you out of here. I love you, Daddy. And he's like, you even do anything. Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, you can't do any. If you try to clear me, you're going to get me killed with this gang in here. And the name of the episode was Mac Kills His Dad. Because that's what ends up happening. He's like, you got me dead. You got me this. They had just so many crazy, crazy situations in that show. But that is still the funniest show on TV.
I've also been continuing to watch Arrow. Mm-hmm. My son and I obviously love The Flash, watch The Flash. I was totally late to the party on Arrow.
Yeah, same
We've
with
now
me.
Started watching it on Netflix. And the Deadshot storyline is the one that we're dealing with now, which is sort of the back end of the first season of Arrow, which is really good. We're also at the point where Roy Harper is now obsessed with finding Arrow because he believes that he owes his life to him.
Yeah.
So obviously the beginning of Arsenal happening here as well. And I'm really, really liking that show. And the stuff with Deathstroke on the island is just awesome.
Yeah. The funniest thing that happened a couple of days ago is my wife and I actually sat down together to watch The Last Man on Earth. And that is the Will Forte show.
The Will Forte show, the new one.
From Saturday Night Live.
Yep.
I love him. I think he is hysterical. And I watched, it was an hour episode, so it was 2 episodes put together.
Uh-huh.
I'm watching this, and I kept looking over at my wife because my wife does not share my sense of humor. I like people
puking. In other
puking.
Words, she doesn't like stupid stuff.
Yes.
And we like stupid stuff. My wife is the same way. She does not like things that are stupid.
I like watching people throw up on each other. Yeah. I like pee jokes. I like poop humor. I love
stuff.
You liked
the part in Ace Ventura 2 where he got spit on 1,000 times.
Oh.
Yeah.
I love that stuff.
Yeah.
So, much to my surprise, my wife is laughing hysterically during this show. Something happens. He's the last man on Earth. He has gone and driven all over the world trying to find people. But what he has done is he's collected everything. Like, he uses the Constitution for a napkin. He has Picassos and Rembrandts and all sorts of famous paintings all over the place. And there's no running water. So he has a poop pool. And he has all the stuff that he has to do. So he cuts a hole in the diving board to poop through it. And then I forgot her name, but it's the voice of Louise from Bob's Burgers.
Oh, Kristen Schaal.
Yes.
Right? Yep.
She is the last woman on earth and she is incredibly annoying. So he's like,
I love her.
Just send me a woman so we can have a relationship and I'm not so alone. And she is there and she's very pretentious. You know, there's a whole thing about, you know, hey, you say tomato, you say tomato, I say tomato. He goes, no, everybody says tomato. You're the only one that says tomato. And that's their whole relationship is everything is just insane. She's like, you know what? We need to repopulate the world. And he's like, all right, I think I can do that. But we need to be married first. And he's like, why do we got to be married first? They go to a grocery store to go get some supplies. And he parks in the handicap parking. And she's freaking out going, you can't park here. It's handicap parking. He's like, there's nobody here on earth. I'm going to park wherever I want. And he parks right in the store, drives right through the store. So this show, I didn't know what to expect, but man.
Now, what is it?
It's on Fox.
Oh, it's on Fox.
It's
okay.
It's the 8:30. I think it's right after
The
Simpsons.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Now.
I thought it was like a Netflix deal or something
yeah.
like that.
Oh,
okay.
This show is insane. Lots of fun.
Did you happen to see the R-rated Power Rangers movie that came out this past week.
No, but I also missed In Service of Nothing, the James Bond one that came out that they already pulled.
All right, I'm going to wait then. Watch them this week, and we will talk about them next week, because the Power Rangers one has Katie Sackhoff in it and has James Van Der Beek in it.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so you're going to want to check that out. And then the last thing I'll just mention is spring training has started.
Yes.
I have been listening to my beloved San Diego Padres for the past 2 days. I have the MLB app and everything, and I got the baseball package this year, so I will be able to watch them play, because they are actually going to be decent this
year. Yes, they are.
And it's just so – to me, baseball on the radio is one of the most wonderful things.
Agree with you 1,000%.
Of the modern age. Like, I – that from now until late October, this is like the soundtrack music – of whatever I'm doing at the time. And that's what I love about it, because baseball has that very deliberate pace.
Yep.
You can just have a baseball game on in the background. You could be writing. You could be doing chores. You could be doing a million other things. Baseball on in the background. And I just, even though it's still freezing cold here,
yep,
it's going to be like -4 tonight as we sit here and record this now, being able to listen to baseball and watch some of the games as well is, spring is around the corner. You yep. just feel it.
And you and I, you are where I was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, or no, about 3 years ago, that our teams were pretty bad for a long time.
I'm
the Washington Nationals, love them. That's my team. San Diego Padres for you. You've had some brutal years. I had a pretty bad start coming from Montreal. But before, you would always look at spring training as, you know what? Oh, they're going to win this many games and they're going to be in contention. And then 3 weeks into the season, you're like, yeah, that's crap.
Yep.
It's not going to happen. This year, you guys are looking to maybe second. I'd say second in the division.
Yeah. They're picked to go second and third. So they're not picked to win the World Series or anything like that, but they have the talent to compete and anything can happen
yep.
once the season starts. So I do have a lot of optimism for this season. If nothing else, they will be a very fun team to watch and listen to this year. And they are coming to Citi Field to play the Mets the final week of July, and I need to be there. I really want to take my kids to see a game, and I really want them to see the Padres.
Why don't we go? Well, we'll plan, because I have not yep. gone to the new stadium
yet. And there's a Thursday game that's at like noon or 1. So you think you get the tickets to the Thursday game, you go up in the morning, you watch the game. By the time it's over, you get dinner on the way back. Yep. It's a day trip.
Yeah.
So definitely thinking about that, and super psyched that baseball is back on. So there you go. That is your BoobTube Big Screen Bonanza. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will have your creator spotlight.
For the best in comics, gaming, sports cards, and toys, it's got to be Most Excellent. Providing the best service and coolest stores for almost 20 years, Most Excellent will be the only stop you need for all your needs. Not only is Most Excellent the official local comic shop of the Secret Identity podcast, it's the local shop of those who like service, quality, and no-hassle shopping. So check it all out at www.mostexcellentcomics.weebly.com, and on eBay, it's one word, Most Excellent Collectibles.
And we are back with your creator spotlight, and a pretty big name this week. Gail Simone is our creator spotlight, and you got a chance not only to interview her at Boston Comic Con, but this was coming off you moderating the DC Comics panel at Boston Comic Con, and then you got to sit down and talk to her.
Yeah, Gail was set up right behind us the entire time, so talking with her throughout the course of the weekend, and a huge thrill to be hosting or moderating the panel that it was her. And then, you know, Greg Capullo and Scott Snyder ended
sure.
up walking in and getting involved in that one as well. And I don't remember if I mentioned in the interview, but I remember talking to a couple people afterwards that came up and said, oh, that was a great panel. It was a lot of fun. I really would rather have had Gail for the entire hour.
Yeah, you do mention that to her. And what I love about listening to Gail in this interview is that she's so humble.
Yeah.
You know, like she you can tell that you're a huge fan of her in the interview. And she's just a super nice.
Yep.
And I've seen her a few times at shows. I've never gotten a chance to sit down and talk to her, but she constantly has. She's one of those creators that people go to shows to specifically go and see.
Yes.
And has a reputation of just being a wonderful person to be around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you think of people like Mark Waid is another guy yep. that we talk about like that, or or Jim Salicrup,
yeah,
or you know some of the, or Jimmy Palmiotti or something like that. You know what I mean? Gail is in that group as well, I think, of people that you want to go and spend time with and talk to at a show, and she is super gracious to her fans.
Yep.
You mentioned in the interview, and I follow her on Twitter and have followed her on Twitter forever, she engages like few other creators with the fandom and with yeah. people in social media and stuff like that. And she's just so accessible to everybody. That is awesome. Not to mention, you know, the Red Sonja, and now she's doing Red Sonja and Conan.
Yes, Red Sonja Conan. Yep.
Although this interview took place before that, but you guys do touch on Sensation Comics because this was right as that
the first issue was coming out
just
the next
starting
week
to happen. So that's pretty cool as well. But yeah, great interview, and hopefully at some point I'll get to sit down with Gail
yeah.
and talk to her because we read different stuff from her.
Yeah.
And that's what's kind of cool about a lot of the people that you and I have both had a chance to interview over the years is that, and Mark Waid's a great example, you know, I'll sit down with him and talk about this stuff, and then you'll sit down with him and talk about something completely different because our comic tastes run in different directions too. And so that's really cool. But, yeah, and I will put a link to Gail's Twitter in our show notes so that you can follow her. But she's definitely one of the most entertaining creators to follow on Twitter. So, and of course, we thank her for her time, and it is a great interview. So we're going to get right into that. That is going to wrap up this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
And the Creator Spotlight coming to you once again from Boston Comic Con, www.bostoncomiccon.com. It's where you want to go for information on the show you obviously just missed and next year's show. On the website, they've got the dates already set up. Make your time, make your plans to come here. I know I rag on Boston that I don't like the city, but I love this comic show, one of our favorites of the year. And we're joined now by somebody who has always been one of my favorites since Simpsons number 50, the legendary Gail Simone. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. How are you? And I, however, do like the city of Boston, and I do like Boston Comic Con, too. So come next year.
There we go. This is such an amazing show, and we always joke around on the show about how I can drive anywhere in the world but Boston. 20 years at UPS, I still get lost in this city. So let's go back a little bit to when you got on The Simpsons. We were kind of joking around about this a little bit. Your Simpsons number 50, I was looking at it going, that's your first book? I thought for years, you were writing for years before that book came out, and certainly not the case.
No, not the case at all. Simpsons number 50 was my first pro comic book work after the column You'll All Be Sorry, which was online.
Yeah.
And then after that came Deadpool at Marvel, and then I started Birds of Prey at DC after that. So it's really, I've really only been in the industry, if you count, you know, the column that was online and the Women in Refrigerator site, which was not professional work, really. It's really only been just slightly over 10 years. So it's nice. It's just that I've written a lot of comics in those 10 years.
I was just going to say, you really packed a lot in those 10 years.
Yeah, I sure have, and it's been a blast.
Now, we were on the panel together. I always say we were on the panel. You were on the panel. I just was the guy trying to start the whole thing off. I was really blown away by you and your presence and what you were saying about the struggles and what you had to come across and fight to get through to this and get it where you are in the industry, and how much you still love it and embrace it, and there's no bitterness or anything. You just love what you do. And I sat there listening to you talk, going, she is completely inspiring. Do you look at yourself as somebody that is the, you know, person who broke down the fence and broke down the walls for women to break in, or do you just look at, hey, I do this for a living, and it's not, it's, if I help people, that's fine.
This choice number two is more how I view it, and also it's something that I didn't set out to do, I have to be honest, and I always feel a little bit embarrassed when I tell the story of how I broke in the industry, because I had this silly column online that I did for fun at night that my family didn't even really know about, while during the day I ran my hair salon. And it was only when I was going to start getting paid when I had to say, you know, this is what I've been doing, because I didn't want there to be these strange checks in the mail that, you know, that no one knew where they came from. And then I was recruited from that column to write for Simpsons Comics. And but I've worked really hard. I decided at some point just to take the opportunities as they came, because I was terrified. I was like, I'm not a writer. Why should I write Simpsons comics? I'm a fan of Simpsons. This makes no sense to me. And then I just had that moment where I said, you know, no one's ever going to offer this to me again, so I'm just going to go for it. And if I can't do it, I can't do it. At least I would have tried.
Yeah.
And then other opportunities were coming up, and I was taking them. And I just, I am a really stubborn person, which that's a quality that you can either use for good or evil. And I think I just, you know, and I also have a thick skin. I've been through a lot, and so I kind of ignored a lot of the really negative things that happened, and just looked at the positive, which is kind of what my temperament is anyway. Yeah. And I think that's helped a lot. And all the people who were supportive is what really helped, because when I started getting email and things from people who were reading the work and telling me what it meant to them, and sales were going up with Birds of Prey, yep, and things were happening, that is what gives you the kind of the inner strength to ignore the negative and just, you know, look for the positive.
I think probably one of the biggest compliments I can give you, well, actually two. The first one being, I remember that point when people stopped talking about Gail Simone, the awesome woman writer, and just Gail Simone, the writer. And I remember sitting in a comic book store and people saying that, because unfortunately, you know, everybody gets pigeonholed into whatever they are. And, you know, I grew up a Native American, and my jokes were all, everybody always said, you know, oh, you're the best Native American hockey player on our team. But back then it was Indian. You're the best Indian hockey player on our team. And it was like, yeah, I guess, whatever. But I remember that moment when you just became one of those great writers. And I can picture when Birds of Prey started to really take off, and we used to have our little comic book talks at the store on Wednesdays, and people saying, you know, she's an awesome writer, instead of, you know, what a great woman writer.
Yeah, it's really great. It's also really great that there are so many voices out there that support the work that those of us who want diversity in comics and diversity of creators who support that, who also contribute to it. It all really helps. But I've noticed that this year in particular, there's a lot of female creators who are not only in the top sales charts, but winning awards and things. And it's very exciting. And I was thinking, because I did have the honor of winning the first Stanley True Believer Award for my body of work, which was really shocking and exciting. I didn't even have a speech prepared because I was sure there was absolutely no chance.
Yeah.
And it doesn't say on those awards best female whatever.
Yep.
So it's really cool to see so many female creators being nominated and winning those awards.
Now, on the panel yesterday, there were a bunch of friends of mine that were there and some other podcasters, and they came up, and I just got interviewed by one show, which is still a little weird for me to be interviewed for another show or to be interviewed as a writer for the book I did.
Right.
So they were like, oh, man, that panel was awesome. And one of the guys goes, I wish Gail Simone was the only one on it, because I wanted to hear what she had to say for an hour. And I'm like, well, you know that Snyder and Capullo are right over there. And he goes, no, they were great, but I really wanted to hear what Gail had to say. And I wanted to share that with you.
Oh, well, that's very sweet. I think, and this is why I think it's important to have a diverse roster of creators in the industry, because it is having a little bit of a different perspective. And I'm not saying that all male creators have the same perspective, because they absolutely do not.
Yeah.
But when I first started, it was terrifying to me. It wasn't terrifying to me that I was a woman in this industry. That I dealt with all my life,
yeah,
you know. The things that scared me were, I'm not from New York.
Yeah.
I was unable to finish my college degree due to money reasons. I've never even hardly been out of this little town that I live in, let alone, you know, not living in New York. Those were the kinds of things that I really stressed about, was, you know, how are people going to react to me that I'm not part of this group of cool people from New York City?
Yeah.
And so I think that it's not just the fact that I'm a woman doing this, it's the fact that you really can have a different perspective, and other people want to hear the way that you view life, stories, what you want to talk about. Doesn't matter what part of the world you're from, how you were raised. Sometimes that can be an asset, because it's a different viewpoint than what we've seen before.
So let's talk really quick, because I know you got a line of people getting ready to come in and see you. Birds of Prey, I'm going to say, is awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Anytime you weren't on the series, it wasn't the same. And Batgirl, amazing. I mean, that's another book that if it doesn't have your name on it, I go into it with a, I don't know, we're going to have to wait and see. You've got something coming up right now that I think we can talk about a little bit.
I'm not sure if we can. I don't know what you're referring to.
Is it National Comics or Sensation Comics?
Oh, yeah, we can talk about that. Sensation Comics, I'm so excited about that, because when I was writing Wonder Woman, I always wanted there to be a second Wonder Woman book.
Yep.
And I felt kind of bummed out, because Batman always had more than one book.
Yeah.
Superman always had more than one book. Well, why didn't Wonder Woman have more than one book? And it just didn't happen at that time, and I'm so excited that it's happening now. And also, I'm very excited about the format that they're doing it in, because Wonder Woman is such a large character and so worldwide. She's really grown beyond all of us, really. And so to be able to tell stories from any incarnation of her, any, if you want to tell a story about, you know, the gods, you can. If you want to tell a story about, you know, the version that I did of Wonder Woman, you can. If you want to tell back in when she first was created, you can. And the teams of creators they have on are fantastic, and I just can't wait to see the different interpretations and the different ways of presenting Wonder Woman.
I just want to see her punching Nazis, because that is my thought. Is, I mean, I was a kid reading war comics when I was younger, and then when you find out there was a golden age and you saw Wonder Woman punching Nazis and riding horseback beating up soldiers, I was like, this is Wonder Woman. And then the TV show, the first season, fighting Nazis.
Yeah.
Is she going to be fighting Nazis? I mean, the traditional, well, not the new ones.
Right. She won't be in Ethan Van Sciver and I's Wonder Woman story, but she does. There are Amazons that come into Gotham, so I don't want to give too much away, but this story is really fun because she comes into Gotham with Wonder Woman's techniques on how to deal with Gotham and Gotham's troubles, and it's interesting to see how that goes over in Gotham. And she calls for help, of course, and then to see how that happens. And she gets very frustrated, and Ethan's artwork is just absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Him and I have wanted to do Wonder Woman together forever, so it's a dream come true for both of us. And then the look of it, not just Ethan's art, but the coloring, it's like really saturated color, and it just gives you this feeling that Wonder Woman brought all this color into Gotham. And I'm really excited about the way it looks.
I can't wait. So where can people find you on Twitter? Because my show partner, Brian, every time we do a show, he's like, did you read what Gail says? I'm not on Twitter because I can't handle any more information coming in. And he's always talking about the awesome stuff that you post. So where can people find you on Twitter?
Just at Gail Simone.
It's that easy, isn't it?
Yep.
And you're on Facebook as well. And do you have a website?
I don't have a website. I have a Tumblr and Facebook. I am on Facebook, but it's really hard to get in touch with me through Facebook. So Twitter really is the best way right now.
And I'll finish this. You talked about being a hairdresser. That was my first dream. I wanted to be a hairdresser as a young kid. So continued success. Thank you for coming to Boston. Thank you for the panel. And personally, I guess, thank you for the great work you've done, the inspiration that you've been to my daughters, especially my oldest, who knows comic books and knows the creators and remembers, hey, Devin Grayson, hey, Gail Simone, these are women's names, and just loving that. So I hope you have a great time in Boston and safe travels back.
I will, and thank you. And thank you, Boston, for having me.
And so ends yet another Creator Spotlight. So on behalf of our guest, the talented Gail Simone, thank you so much for joining us. Have a good one till we talk again soon.